Hello and welcome to the Heathrow results for the 6 months to June 30th, 2020. Throughout the call, all participants will be on listen-only mode, so there's no need to mute your own individual lines, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference is being recorded. I'll now hand the floor to John Holland-Kay, Chief Executive Officer. Please begin your meeting.
Hello and welcome to all those who've dialed in to join our H1 2020 results presentation. I'm John Holland-Kay, the Chief Executive at Heathrow Airport, and joining me virtually are Javier Echave, CFO, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. First, I hope you and your families are keeping safe and well. And while the technology is allowing us to be virtually together today, I look forward to the time when we can next meet in person. Today, we'll present our financial results for the 6 months to June 2020, including our three-phase plan in response to the COVID-19 crisis, a review of our financial position, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we'll conclude by taking your questions. So let me start with an initial overview on slide 4. When we last spoke 3 months ago, our passenger traffic was already severely impacted by COVID-19, reducing 97% compared to 2019. And that's continued through June, with our quarter two passenger numbers down 96%. In total, we served just over 15 million passengers in the first 6 months of the year, which is 60% down on last year. Health and safety has remained our top priority, and we've reviewed the entire airport experience to ensure that passengers and colleagues can travel safely, and I'll take you through the measures we've taken shortly. We're grateful that the government has taken a risk-based approach to reopening borders and allowed quarantine-free travel from green and amber countries, which represent around 30% of our normal demand. And we're now working on the UK's first pilot for a test on arrival system with Collinson Swissport. Passengers would be tested on arrival, go into quarantine, and then have a second test after 5 or 8 days. And if they test negative to both, then they would be allowed to come out of quarantine. And this could help to reduce the risk of quarantine on return for passengers going to green or amber countries, as has happened in Spain, but could also open up vital long-haul routes such as the US, Canada, and Singapore. Now, today on the media, most of the focus has been on that testing regime, but our financial position is probably the more important, particularly for this audience. And in total, our liquidity position remains very strong, with £2.7 billion of cash and committed facilities. And that puts us into a good place, given the market is so uncertain and so competitive. And we have taken significant steps moving very quickly to reduce our cash burn and make sure we have a more competitive and flexible cost base. In terms of our strategic priorities, we remain focused on delivering greater resilience, better service, and lower costs. And I'll talk a bit about that shortly. Now, the current crisis has shown that the regulatory framework, while having many strengths, is not fit for purpose. It was designed for a stable business with limited volatility. It offers limited upside potential, but it does have unlimited downside potential, and that has been realized in the last 3 months. And this asymmetric risk is just not built to reflect the kind of returns that would be required to take into account that risk. And we're calling on the CAA to ensure that the risk-return balance is fair. And finally, delivering our long-term growth ambitions needs to be done in the right way, and we hope to use this crisis to accelerate the move to a more sustainable aviation sector, and in particular, decarbonizing global aviation. On slide 6, I've just outlined our three-phase plan for how we're responding to this crisis. This has obviously been a seismic challenge for the aviation industry, including Heathrow, and we must build back in a way which allows us to be more competitive than we were pre-crisis. We will stick to our values and our vision of giving passengers the best airport service in the world, and our four priorities, which we have talked about for many years: Mojo, making Heathrow a great place to work, transforming customer service, beating the plan, and sustainable growth, remain as valid as they ever were. And within service, there is clearly an increased focus on health and safety for our passengers and colleagues. But there are three phases to our plan. Our immediate focus is on protecting our business and making sure that we survive and are in a good position to come out strongly as the market recovers. The second is to make sure we win the recovery when it comes. And the third is to build back better for the future. We don't want to go back to doing things the way we always have done. We want to use this crisis as an opportunity And I'll touch on each of those in a little bit more detail. On slide 7, I've just introduced our new operating model. And our first response to the crisis in March was to very quickly move to reduce our costs, and that included cutting a third of our management roles. And while that was very painful to do, especially as it happened remotely, which none of us would have chosen to do, it has put us in a position where we now have a very highly skilled, experienced team who are well placed to lead us out of this crisis. And because we took that action early, everyone knows now where they stand, and that certainty is a real strength for us as we move into the recovery mode. At the same time, we reorganized the business from a series of functions to a more logical, structured decision-making flow, with teams responsible for developing strategy, others delivering the best solution to help bring that strategy to life, whether that's people change, technology, process change, or capital investment, and then our frontline teams responsible for implementation. And this restructure has also allowed us to develop our talent and succession planning and improve our diversity. So now 40% of our leadership team is female, which is getting towards our target of 50%, and 19% of our leadership team come from BAME backgrounds. Now that's significantly higher than many other businesses, but our target is to get to 40%, which would reflect the catchment area that we have around Heathrow. So we've got a lot further to go, but we are making progress, and I want everyone to be able to fulfill their potential at Heathrow, regardless of race, sexual orientation, disability, or gender. Turning to slide 8, you see the results of those rapid actions we took. And here we're comparing the cash burn that we were forecasting back in our December 2019 investor report to what we currently forecast we will be able to achieve. And you'll see that by cutting our operating costs by at least £300 million this year and capital expenditure by over £650 million, we're taking our cash burn down from 240 million to around 159 million. And that, of course, has helped us to extend our liquidity horizon. Moving on to slide 9, our current operations. I thought it might be interesting just to bring to life what is actually happening at the airport, because even though we only have about 15% of our normal passenger numbers, there is still a lot of life in the airport. You'll know that we moved to a single runway operation and consolidated down to just two terminals while maintaining flexibility to ramp up as passenger demand returns. We had about half of our airlines flying in April and May, and that's now back up to around 70% of airlines flying, albeit with reduced schedules. We've started to reopen some of our facilities, such as Terminal 5C, and we've started to move airlines out of Terminal 2 into Terminal 5, and American and Qatar have both moved now, and that relieves some of the pressure on Terminal 2, but still leaves room for all airlines to start to grow. And we'll see some additional airlines moving into Terminal 5 over the coming months. Now, following the decision by a number of airlines to come into Heathrow and to consolidate their London flying into Heathrow, we're now able to offer 25 new sunny low-cost destinations. So if you haven't yet booked a holiday, please book a holiday from Heathrow. We have some fantastic summer getaways, very good value for money. And if you are flying through Heathrow, I'd love to have your feedback on anything we can do to make your experience better. We've had some new airlines coming in, three so far, including people like Czech Airlines, and another three due to join us later in the year. And we've been working closely with our airline partners to encourage them to hand back any slots that they are not flying at the moment because they are not required to, as the 80-20 rule has been suspended. And that has allowed us to bring in some of those new entrants. And that's allowed us to offset some of the passenger losses we would otherwise have faced, and to grow our network and the range of passengers we have flying through. So there's slightly more leisure mix at the moment than we might normally have. And this, I think, illustrates the strength of the hub airport model. We have a much wider range of destinations than many point-to-point airports, and we've got a wider mix of passengers with pretty much equal numbers of tourism, visiting friends and relatives, and business passengers than most other airports would have. And that makes us very resilient and also an attractive base for airlines to move into if they have the opportunity. In terms of retail activity, stores have been starting to open up again. And it's interesting how quickly passengers just expect the airports to feel like they're back to normal. We're not quite back to normal yet. We have about 40% of retail outlets open across Terminal 2 and Terminal 5. You'll know that retailers have been very significantly impacted by the crisis, and some have sadly gone into liquidation. And we are in discussions with new retailers to fill all of those spaces and get back to normal as fast as we can. And there are some surprising points of sunlight in what can often seem a gloomy outlook. For example, there seems to have been a boom in engagements during lockdown because Tiffany is seeing an increase in engagement rings. And last week we had one ring selling for over £50,000 since they reopened. That's quite remarkable. So I was reading earlier about lockdown revenge and people taking advantage of being able to get out and spend again. It's good to see that that is happening. Now, turning to slide 10, winning the recovery. The starting point for this is to get to make sure that it is safe for people to travel through the airport and travel on the plane. And we've been working closely with other airports and airlines and regulators, the European Centre for Disease Control, to make sure we've got really good standards of biosecurity and that we can keep both passengers and colleagues safe. The first part of that is about personal protection. So it is now mandatory to wear face coverings in the terminals and in all operational areas. We've put in fly-safe pit stop points across the airport where passengers can pick up hand sanitizer, antiviral wipes, and face masks free of charge to make sure that they are kept safe. But of course, many people bring their own with them. Where we have fixed points, such as check-in desks and security areas, we've installed Perspex screens, which provides some protection for both the colleague and the passenger, without the need to rely on face coverings. And of course, social distancing is very difficult at some points within the journey, particularly places like check-in, and we rely on Perspex screens and face masks. But wherever possible, we encourage people to socially distance and put in seat blocking and barriers and floor stickers to help people to understand how far apart to stay. Now, you may have heard that we are pushing the agenda in terms of health screening. We've had thermal screening trials in place in the airport for the last couple of months. You probably wouldn't notice them other than we draw your attention to them. And thermal screening is widely used for a lot of destinations, although it hasn't become adopted as a standard by the UK government as yet. But increasingly, the focus is coming on to testing, and I talked earlier about some of the testing standards we're starting to experiment with. In addition to the trial with Collins and Swissport, we are also looking at some rapid point of care tests, which would allow for a quicker and cheaper result. And we're trialing those with some of our colleagues at the moment. And finally, in terms of hygiene, we've got over 600 hand sanitizer points across the airport. We've got additional cleaning and sanitation procedures, so anywhere that is regularly touched is regularly cleaned. And probably the most, some of the new technology we've got in place are things like antiviral wraps on security trays or on handrails, UV cleaning on handrails where possible. And probably the thing that's got most excitement are the ultraviolet cleaning robots, which are a marvel that I've seen in action. And the feedback we've had from passengers so far is really excellent. I think a lot of people are a little anxious about flying for the first time, but very quickly relax, feel looked after, and have a really great experience in the airport and on the plane. And the more people who we can get flying over the summer, I think the more people we'll have coming back to business after the summer. Now, moving on to slide 11, a comparison with our European hub competitors. You'll see over the last 6 months, we've been slightly more resilient than other European hub airports, though this may be largely related to the speed at which different countries went into lockdown. But you'll know that we've been playing our parts to keep critical trade links open during the crisis. Interestingly, you'll see that cargo volumes are down more at Heathrow than at other hub airports, even though we have had more freighter business coming into Heathrow. So why is that? Well, a lot of it is because we have a different business model at Heathrow than other hubs. They tend to have more capacity, so dedicated freighters are a regular part of their business mix. Where for Heathrow, We only have seven dedicated freighters a day out of around 650 regular arriving flights. So it's only about 1% of our business. All the rest of the cargo, which makes us the biggest port in the UK, all the rest of that goes in the belly hold of passenger planes. And what we've seen is that as many of those passenger destinations are long-haul markets, many of those are closed or have fewer flights going towards them, we have less cargo going out of the UK. And that is a really concerning indicator for the UK economy. Until we can get those long-haul passenger planes flying again, then we're not going to be able to get our goods to market or to get the supply chain moving again as well. So this is a real wake-up call for the UK government to get people flying again. Now, what about the future? If we turn to slide 12, we've just laid out our plans to build back better. Now, we've been a leader in our sector and beyond our sector with our sustainability plans. We've talked a lot about the work with the transport, the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, or TCFD, and we've included information in the report on how we are managing our climate impact and evolving in response to the risks we see coming out of climate change. And we see sustainability as being a responsibility for me, the exec, and the entire organization, not just for our sustainability team. You'll know that 3 or 4 years ago, we launched Heathrow 2.0, our leading plan for sustainable growth. The targets we set there are completely aligned with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and we're making good progress on delivering against some of those. And some of those targets are easier to hit than they were. Late running flights, you won't be surprised. We have many fewer of those. Reducing our carbon footprint equally happens to be happening much quicker in 2020, but others have become more challenging, including things like changes to mode share. So we'll be refreshing our targets and our plan with our new version of Heathrow 2.0 to make sure that where we have made progress, we bank that and move on to the next target, and that our objectives are fit for purpose. But the elephant in the airport, of course, is carbon. And there's been a lot of focus, quite rightly, on that recently. And if you've traveled through Heathrow recently, you'll know that we've had a consumer campaign to raise awareness of the carbon impacts of flying and what we're doing about it, how our plans are evolving. And our aim is to take a lead in getting not just the UK aviation industry, but the global aviation industry to net zero carbon by 2050. And over the next decade, sustainable aviation fuel represents the only way to decarbonize flight by 2050. And I'm encouraged that the UK's Committee for Climate Change has recognized the role that SAF could play, and that the UK government has put a focus on SAF in the Jet Zero Council, which the Prime Minister launched last week and of which I am a member. And our hope is that the UK government will really get behind this, make it one of the flagship goals for the COP26 summit in the UK next year, and that we can build a global coalition of support behind this to get a worldwide agreement at the ICAO General Assembly in 2022. And finally, as we build our business back better, we're going to expect some fairly lumpy demand recovery. And so we need to have a much more flexible cost base that can better adapt to changes in demand, as well as a lower cost and more competitive cost base. So that is something that we are working hard on at the moment. To achieve this goal, we'll have to work even more closely with our Team Heathrow partners and are looking at how we can work with them to help to build the Heathrow of the future. And there'll be a strong role for a digital transformation in this. And you can imagine that in order to keep people safe when they're traveling through the airport, moving towards a touchless journey will be a big help. We've done a lot of work on this over the last few years around security, bringing in facial recognition and CT scanners, which allow you to keep your laptops and liquids in bags. And I think that will accelerate. We're also working closely on our retail offer to see how we can move more of that to be digital. And then our final point on slide 13 around building back better. You will know that we are continuing to appeal to the Supreme Court the expansion decision to make sure that we can continue to deliver expansion in line with the Airport Commission and the government's recommendations. And that might seem an odd thing to be talking about at a time when we're down to a single runway, but if the UK economy recovers in the way that we hope it will, then in 10 years' time, we will badly wish as a country that we had a third runway at our hub airport to avoid being reliant on a French or German hub airport to get an independent return to global markets. So it's important that we continue to pursue that, but it'll probably take us a little bit longer to get that open than would otherwise have been the case. And then finally, just to remind you on the regulatory timetable, we are coming to the end of the extended Q6 period and getting ready for H7, which starts in January 2022. We submitted our first thoughts on this towards the end of last year, and we'll shortly be sending an updated business plan to the CAA for consultation with them and other stakeholders. And we expect to receive the initial proposals from the CAA in summer 2021 and the final decision in autumn 2021. As I mentioned earlier, we will be working with the CAA to make sure we have the right regulatory incentives for investment for the benefit of consumers. So now I'll hand over to Javier to review our financial performance.
Excellent. Thank you, John. And welcome to everyone who has joined us today for our results presentation. And most importantly, I hope you and your loved ones keep all safe and well. So let me share with you an overview of our financial performance starting on slide 15. So obviously, as you have already heard, our performance has clearly been affected by the reduced number of passengers traveling through Heathrow. So over the last 3 months, we have had on average 96% fewer passengers. And obviously, this rapid deterioration in volumes has led revenue to decline 85% in the second quarter alone, with both aeronautical and retail revenue suffering the most. In response to this crisis, our operating costs declined nearly 25% in the quarter, reflecting the rapid actions we took to reduce our cost base, and more importantly, to protect the financial resilience of the business. Altogether, this means that the adjusted EBITDA that we are reporting today declined to losses of £93 million in the second quarter of the year. Moving on to below EBITDA, it's worth noting a couple of sizable impacts. First of all, is we have booked an exceptional loss of £122 million, £20 million of which impacts our cash flow in the period. So the exceptional items of 122 includes two things. First of all, £37 million related to restructuring costs, the program that John alluded earlier. And the second impact is £85 million, which are associated with non-cash write-off of previously capitalized costs, as some of the projects were either put on hold or were unlikely to resume in the short term as a result of COVID-19. So despite the accounting write-off that we are recognizing in our income statement in the period, these costs are still included in our regulatory asset base, and will be fully recoverable through our regulatory framework. In addition to the £122 million of exceptional losses, we reflect in our accounts the non-cash fair value movement of two items. First one is fair value of our investment properties, which value has deteriorated by £252 million, and that's primarily related with the temporary loss of trade in our car parks. And then the second negative fair value movement is related with our risk management swap portfolio, which comprises mainly interest rates, cross-currency, and inflation swaps. And altogether, the value deteriorated by £214 million. So when you combine the lower EBITDA in the period with the exceptional items, as well as the fair value losses, all that drove our income statement to £1.1 billion losses before taxes for the first 6 months of the year. So obviously, despite these record losses, we have a robust balance sheet and liquidity that gives us high confidence that we will overcome this crisis. So So some of the, moving into other elements of the balance sheet, our capital expenditure decreased by 28% in the period to £296 million. Or if we look at quarter two in isolation, a run rate of £24 million per month, which again has been primarily driven to protect our monthly cost burn, as John explained earlier. Our regulatory asset base has declined slightly, reflecting initiatives to protect liquidity. But it's also worth noting here that the CA has confirmed that all the early expansion costs incurred up until the end of February can now be added to the RAP. We're already added to the RAP, but they have now confirmed, which gives a welcome clarity on cost recovery during these uncertain times. In terms of liquidity, we continue benefiting from a strong liquidity position with £2.2 billion of cash held at Heathrow SP, and additionally, over £400 million of cash held at Heathrow Finance. So the total liquidity of the group at the end of June is £2.7 billion. So let me take now take a closer look at the details, starting with revenue on slide 16. As you can see in the slide, aeronautical revenue declined by 54%, driven by a rapid deterioration in passenger numbers. Purely for transparency purposes, traditionally we disclose revenue per passenger metrics in this slide. We have removed in this occasion, but you can see the details in the press release. And obviously we have removed because they are largely distorted by the minimal passenger numbers we have seen in the period. So if we're looking at average aeronautical revenue per passenger, for instance, this increased by £3.30, as many of the current aircraft movements are with very low load factors or cargo only, which are charged on a per passenger, on a per movement basis. Retail revenue declined by 56%, again driven predominantly by reduced passenger numbers, and many of our non-essential outlets closed in March. John explained also in the map that some of the retailers are starting to open, but for a significant number of weeks in the 6 months, they were closed, reflecting that deterioration in retail revenue. Finally, other revenue is mainly related with Heathrow Express, and that decreased by 35%, obviously, as a consequence of the underlying traffic passenger reduction. To give you a sense of what's to come, let's move to slide 17 to look at traffic guidance. So you will see that as air travel came as hold in the second quarter, we had only about 3% of our usual passenger numbers traveling through the airport. Most of these were primarily repatriation flights and essential travel. And we are seeing a gradual uptake in July following the steps to establish travel corridors, but this is still a long way to go. So we're still at 90% down compared to last year. And overall, we anticipate that the recovery will be gradual, with 64% less passengers this year in comparison with our 2019 performance. While our forecast may look more conservative than others in the market, this reflects our prudent approach. And I just want to mention, this is not a sign that we expect to lose market share or competitivity. In fact, it's actually the opposite. We expect our hub status to provide resilience to this crisis, as John alluded earlier as well. Moving on to slide 18 for an update on our cost base. Our cost decreased by 12%, 11.6% in the six-month period, but by almost 25% in the second quarter alone, reflecting rapid actions that we have taken to reduce our cost base. This means that we have now monetized around £100 million of the £300 million efficiencies announced, but we are on track to deliver at least £300 million in 2020. Obviously, being an infrastructure business and having a large fixed cost base, which is around 80% of our costs, we have managed to reduce costs by circa 30% from our initial plan for the year. If we look at the different components, our biggest expense is people, which represents around a third of our cost base. So we have had, unfortunately, to make drastic and rapid changes on our people cost change. We have implemented a company-wide pay reduction, a bonus cancellation, and we are restructuring the organization. At this point on restructuring, about a third of our senior management have already exited the business on a permanent basis, and about half of our 7,000 plus colleagues are on furlough, the scheme provided by the UK government. We have also consolidated our operation into a smaller footprint, which has allowed us to reduce maintenance and utilities costs. And I think we have seen a phenomenal collaboration from our supply chain. All our costs have reduced significantly. All our supply chain members have contributed, all but one. And currently, in excess of £200 million per year of our operating costs goes to the government in the form of business rates, policing costs, and CAA fees. And this is the area where we haven't seen any material reduction or waiver. So we continue to call on the government to waive business rates for all airports in England and Wales, at least matching the support given to Scottish and Northern Irish airports and the UK's hospitality and leisure sector. Obviously, whilst we continue to explore options to minimise the number of job losses, no support from the government puts increased pressure on the business to reduce costs that we can control. We, as I have mentioned several times in the last few minutes, we remain confident that we will deliver at least £300 million of cost savings this year, but we must also adapt to our new trading environment, changing the way we work to become more flexible, agile, and competitive, because we know that when we transition into the winning the recovery phase, competition is going to be quite tight. Turning to cash flows on slide 19. So hopefully you are very familiar with this slide. And in terms of key elements, our cash flows have been obviously severely impacted by the loss in passenger numbers and revenue, which is down 68% compared to 2019. And using our cash flow for operations alone, we are no longer in position to cover our capital expenditure and interest payments, which is a stark reminder that we need to continue fighting to preserve our liquidity position. You can see in the slide, exactly the same number as I disclosed in Q1, dividends of £100 million. Just as a reminder, those dividends were paid to ultimate shareholders in the early weeks of the year, reflecting the strong cumulative performance of the business in 2019, and obviously before the significant impacts of COVID-19 became evident. Taking into account all the different cash flows in the period, net debt increased by £488 million. Turning to slide 20, and for a look at how we have strengthened our financial resilience, you can see in the slide that we have financially we have followed the same three-phase plan in regard to our financial resilience. So first of all, protecting the business in financial terms means protecting liquidity and protecting debt covenants. So preserving our cash position is and has been absolutely paramount in these extraordinary circumstances, and we are in a strong position which reflects not only our prudent management of finances, but also the ongoing support from our shareholders. Our liquidity position is designed to ensure we can meet all our forecast needs until at least June 2021, if we were assuming an extreme stress test scenario of no revenue, or well into 2022 under our current traffic forecast as per the investor report published in early June. This includes forecast operational costs as well as capital investment, debt service, and debt repayments. Hydro Finance was forecast to breach interest cover ratio and gearing covenants, as you know, and we took a proactive approach and sought a waiver from Hydro Finance creditors. And I'm proud to say that in early July, this process successfully concluded with over 90% of note holders voting in favor of the proposal. So obviously, we are absolutely delighted with the overwhelming backing, and I genuinely thank all of you for your continued support. This now ensures that we can put further focus and energy on the recovery of the business. Moving to the other phases of the plan in terms of recovery, we remain committed to restoring A-minus credit matrix. Obviously, a dialogue continues with rating agencies to ensure visibility and transparency on our situation and our financial performance. And in terms of debt activities, we are planning to move, where possible, to business as usual. And we forecast to raise £1.2 billion in new debt over the next 18 months, most likely to be in Class A format. As usual, in deciding which market to access, we will consider relative value, diversification, and we will also ensure that we provide liquidity to our investors where we have already established a presence. Finally, moving to the last phase of the plan, building back better. Over the last 6 to 12 months, we have started to engage with investors on ESG, and we have shared openly our sustainability agenda. We are very encouraged by the appetite from you, from investors, on sustainable financing. And we intend to integrate Hydro 2.0 KPIs into our future financing plans. An example of that can be regards to pensions, where I have personally been working with the trustees of our defined benefit pension scheme. And now I'm delighted to see that they will be using ESG factors when selecting investment managers as part of our investment policy within the scheme. Another example is that for the first time in our 2019 annual report, we have transformed our disclosures on key climate risk mitigations and opportunities, and this is on the back of the recommendations from the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. In terms of next steps, we plan to obtain a formal ESG rating, and we will look to engage with agencies on this fundamental area for the future. Turning to slide 21, our balance sheet remains robust, and we continue to monitor headroom to key ratios. So at Class A and Class B, the headroom to gearing trigger events remain comfortable, whilst at Hydro Finance, the headroom to gearing covenant has reduced. So obviously, the risk of the breach has now been removed in the short term by the waiver we have secured with your support. And with regards to interest cover ratio, as of 30th of June 2020, a forecasting event and trigger event have occurred in relation to the forecast ICR ratio for both Class A and Class B for the 2020 financial year. And the consequence of that is that we have now a distribution lockup in place in the Hydro SP group. And we'll have obviously no adverse effect to Hydro SP creditors, but in practice means that distributions cannot be made from Hydro SP to Hydro Finance to service debt, nor to pay dividends to ultimate shareholders. However, Hydro Finance creditors can find comfort on the strong liquidity position at that level, around £440 million, which is sufficient to service debt for at least 4 years, and there's no maturity settled until 2024. So finalizing and moving on to slide 22 to conclude my part of the presentation, let me share with you a financial outlook. So our forecast assumptions for 2020 remain broadly in line with the guidance published in the June investor report on the 16th of June. We anticipate traffic this year to be down around 64%, whilst hopefully we will see a full recovery of traffic later in the future years, but at this stage not expected until post-2022. We remain committed on protecting liquidity, and we are on track on delivery of management initiatives to deliver at least £300 million in cost savings and a reduction of over £650 million in capital expenditure. Obviously, we look forward to our next touchpoint, and we will be publishing our revised business plan in autumn this year, following on from the initial business plan published in December 2019. So with that, I conclude the financial review, and I'll hand back to John for closing comments. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Javier. And just in closing, I'd like to say a heartfelt thank to all of our colleagues and the wider team Hydro. We always pull together in a crisis, and that's exactly what's been happening over the last 3 or 4 months. And a good example of that is that it took us years of planning to move airlines into Terminal 2 when we opened it in 2014. We moved all of the Terminal 4 airlines into Terminal 2 in just a month. And that was a remarkable example of collaboration. And it's that kind of agility and flexibility and make it happen kind of attitude that we want to really harness as we come out of this crisis. And I'd also like to thank all of our colleagues who've left the business during this time. It's been a very difficult time of change, particularly doing it remotely. But we've got some fantastic people who have left us, who have given us good foundations that we can now build on. But particularly, I want to thank all of you on the call who have supported us through this time. You've been there in the good times and the bad times, and we really appreciate it. And that will set us up for future success and partnership. So let's move on to questions now, and I will ask Mark to coordinate this.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now to enter the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. So once again, that's 01 to ask a question, or 02 if you need to cancel. and there will be a brief pause now whilst we register your questions. Our first question comes from the line of James Farrar at BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Hi. Afternoon, everyone. Thanks.
Hi, James.
Hope everyone at the team is well. I've just got two questions. The first is regarding your guidance, and I appreciate you only came up with, you know, the investor report about 6 weeks ago, but obviously it's a very fluid situation at the moment. And you know, most recently with the Spanish quarantine news. But I just wondered if you could comment on, you know, any observations you would have over the last 6 weeks since those forecasts that are either kind of more positive or potentially more negative than you were expecting 6 weeks ago. And then the second question is just around the relationship with government. I think every time you have a release, you seem to be sort of banging the drum for the government to kind of pull their finger out. I just wonder if you could maybe just talk about sort of just how the communication channels. Is it how you're acting as an industry? Are you going into different departments? Because it does seem surprisingly, well, the government does seem surprisingly slow to react both on, you know, some of the cost issues you've talked about and obviously the issues of quarantine and testing and averages. That's it. Thanks.
Great, thank you. Well, I can probably pick up both of those, which is rare because normally you ask brilliant, insightful financial questions, which are completely baffle me. So in terms of forecasts, actually our model is built up market by market, both geographically and in terms of customer mix, and it's been pretty robust since we put it together. And so actually it has stood up well. So there are obviously some areas are doing a little bit better than we expected, some a little bit less well, but overall, actually, it's been pretty robust. So we're currently not planning to formally update that as we go along. We have a next opportunity to update you on it at the quarter three results, and by that point, we will be through September. We'll have a better sense for whether the business market has come back. We'll hopefully know more about how the reopening of some of these red markets might happen. But actually, so far, so good with our forecast. Second, in terms of relationship with government, I mean, my general observation, and this is not unique to the UK government, but to all the governments where we've spoken with colleagues in other airports and airlines, is that they are understandably completely focused on the immediate health crisis in front of them and keeping the country safe. And they don't have much bandwidth for thinking ahead to how they might solve some of the issues that are going to happen in the future. And it's really up to private business to help them with that thinking. And you could see that as an opportunity for business and government to work together. And that's exactly what we have been doing with both the developing the travel corridors and risk-based approach that the government adopted a few months ago. That's something that we have been advocating for over the last couple of months. And then hopefully also with the testing regime, where we've been working closely with partners in other parts of the world and seeing what they're doing, and also talking with the government to see if we can help to bring in something similar here. So I think it is a natural reflection of how much work there is for government to do, that they need some support from businesses to help to push their thinking forward. So actually, we have a good relationship with the government. These are complex issues. We don't have all the facts, and it's a fast-moving situation. But actually, it's a pretty healthy and constructive relationship. And although it sometimes gets reported differently, we do not criticize the government for anything they are doing. But they've got a really tough job on their hands, and we are here to help. So I hope that helps.
No, thank you. That does. That's helpful on the essay. I think it's also just stressing that it is, yeah, it's a cooperative protest. I guess, yeah, there's only so much banging the drum you can kind of do. But yeah, no, thank you. That's helpful.
It is very much. And we I saw a comment about how if we're using the results to campaign then to government, then that might be a sign of anxiety. Actually, that if you look at our record, that's just what we do. We're a campaigning organisation, and we're very actively engaged with helping to support and develop government policy in a range of areas. I make no apologies for that. Should we move on to the next question?
Thank you. That comes from the line of Arno Borgoin of Amundi Asset Management. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Yes, thank you. Can you just come back on the when your Eastwood expansion capex will be incorporated into your RAB? Because I didn't really understand that. And concerning your forecast, what is embedded in the, when do you think the North American market will be reopened, please?
Great. So in terms of the expansion RAB inclusion, Javier, do you want to pick up that? And then I'll come back
yes.
to the North American market.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. And probably your question comes from my misspelling when I was talking about this subject, so apologies for that in advance. So I think in summary, the CAA originally created two categories of costs, category B and category C, and both were included in the RAB as invested. I think the only difference between Cat B and Cat C is when cash was going to be collected. So Cat C was treated as any other element of the RAB. Cat B, where a return were accrued in the RAB as we were expecting, but we were not monetizing through the period. But just for clarity, all monies were already built in the RAB as efficient incur.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. In terms of the North American market, we had assumed that would start to come back in the middle of quarter three. We'll have to wait and see quite what happens there. Actually, North America is currently outperforming our expectations in spite of the constraints we have. But the it's clearly going to be an important market, in particular the United States. It's 20% of our total volume, and New York alone is 5%. And I think here we would encourage the government on both sides to look at the U.S. as on a regional basis. It is an entire continent. And there are clearly different levels of infection in different parts of the country. And I think if anywhere can be looked at on the regional basis, it would be the United States. And, of course, it's a great opportunity if we can get the some form of testing regime established. North America would be a fantastic market to do that in. And we are talking with our colleagues in the United States at both airports and airlines and the government to see how we can make that happen.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of Sharon Newton at Columbia Threadneedle. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, John. How are you?
Excellent.
A couple of... Good to hear that, John. Couple of simple questions, I hope. I was listening to the results call from ADP recently, and they had... Outlook, they were expecting traffic at the Paris airports only back at 2019 levels between 2024 and 2027. And this seems a bit of a longer time frame than I seem to recall from peer group and even from S&P. And I don't know what you think of that. Is that too pessimistic or is that very specific to the composition of their airports and passengers? And my second question is, and I know you tend to think about your covenants in terms of headroom, but what sort of passenger levels would you need to see in order to maintain Heathrow SP comfortably within its covenants?
Great question. In terms of airports, as you say, ADP is a group of airports, and I can't comment on what their outlook of the market is. When we published our forecast back in June, I think a lot of people saw it as being more pessimistic than others had put out at that time. as I was saying earlier, it has held up very well because it's built on a bottom-up basis for our markets, and we're comfortable that it reflects our best view of the future. Clearly, there's a range of views you can take around that, and one of the biggest unknowns, of course, is the progression of the disease, which we are all still learning more about. But we're comfortable with our forecasts for our business. In terms of covenants, Sally, I don't know whether you're best placed to pick that one up.
Yes, Cheryl.
Hi, Sally.
On the SP covenants level for ICR, we obviously having a three-year rolling basis. Therefore, we're nowhere close to the covenants level. We are in the trigger level, but that only means the cash trapped in the SP group, which is a great protection for the creditors. We don't have any specific PAX level on the covenants, but we have always been giving out the indication to the market in the past about 800 to 900 million EBITDA level for the most constrained covenants, which is more on the history of finance level. Okay. So from SP OPCO level creditor perspective, there's no concerns on the covenants.
Okay. But sort of roughly, did you just say 800 to 900 level EBITDA? Did I hear that correctly?
800 to 900 million EBITDA headroom for the most constrained metrics.
So, Sharon, this is Javier. Let me add something. As Sally mentioned,
sure.
Covenant level in SP is calculated on a three-year trailing basis.
Yes, exactly.
So if you were looking at our investor report back in June, our ICR in 2019 actuals was 3.74. So that means that even if we were getting no traffic at all, no revenue at all in 2020 and 2021, we will still be above or our covenant level. So in terms of Heathrow SP, we have such a remote probability of covenant that we are in a very, very strong position.
Okay, and what about the net debt to RAB? I mean, in terms of headroom here, how much do you think you'll be able to maintain over the next over that time frame?
Yeah, so I think as Sally mentioned, I think net debt to RAB only operates as a trigger event, and effectively we'll be preserving cash coming out. So there's no covenant level related with gearing at the Heathrow SP group. So effectively what we will be having is cash being locked, which is currently has already happened. So the fact that we have such a strong liquidity position both in the Heathrow SP and the Heathrow Finance, and we have a very healthy refinancing profile, means that actually we are in a pretty strong position as well on the gearing side.
Okay, and that covers you. So that's why you're looking at it is even almost no revenues. You're comfortable into 2022.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, everyone.
Great. And if we have no revenues for 2 years, then the world economy has even bigger issues.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. And should we take the next question?
There are no further questions in the queue so far. So once again, if there are any final questions, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now. And we've had a further question come for you. That's from the line of Paul Dew at Fidelity. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. Just two quick ones from me. So just on the funding plans, could you kind of reiterate them again? I heard 1.2 billion, but I didn't hear if it was over the next 12 or 18 months. So if you just clarify that, that would be great. And then how are you kind of managing the infrastructure in terms of being ready for demand coming back? I'm just thinking kind of if you suddenly kind of open up more terminals, how do you have confidence that there's the kind of demand there from the airlines and that you won't kind of incur all these costs, but the demand's not there? Is there any way that you're looking to manage that?
Great question. Sally, do you want to pick up the funding question?
Yes, certainly. It's the 1.2 billion for the next 18 months. Back in the investor report, we put it more out to the 2021. But Heathrow, usually we will look out for any opportunities in the market, both on the private and public, and any currencies. As Javier mentioned earlier, we will continue our policy as well, just to go back to the market. We have already established liquidity and presence. So we will be looking at the capital market opportunity from now onwards.
Could I just check on that? I assume that will be used. Will that be used to repay kind of the drawdown of the facilities?
It's just for general corporate purposes. We may use it to repay debt, but we may use it just to help with the company to build up more liquidity.
Thank you.
But they will be sitting in the same pool.
Great. And then in terms of the infrastructure question, it's a very sophisticated operation question and one that we spend some time planning on. So you're absolutely right. We don't want to open a new Terminal 3, which is would be the next terminal to open, unless we absolutely need to, because that will help us to conserve operating costs, but also helps us to give a better passenger service, because if we only opened it for a few passengers or airlines, we wouldn't be able to support a really good retail offer to go with that. So that's why we are focusing on Terminals 2 and 5 and rebalancing airlines out of Terminal 2 and into Terminal 5, where generally we have a lot more capacity, and we've worked very constructively with British Airways to allow that to happen. And that should get us through the summer peak, which is likely to happen in the next week or two. The other part of infrastructure we've been managing is refurbishment of some of our facilities, taking advantage of the fact that we can work in the daytime when often we have to work at nighttime. And in particular, we have been carrying out deep repairs on the southern runway, which we would normally find very difficult to do in normal circumstances, because it takes longer for the concrete and the tarmac to cure. And so we've been making the most of that in the last few weeks. And that avoids the need for any kind of closures over the next few years to allow those repairs to take place. So we are within a very constrained capital envelope. We're trying to be as opportunistic as we can be to make the most of this time. So I hope that is helpful. We should draw things to a close. And I really want to thank you again for taking the time to join us today. If you've got any further questions, then please do follow up with Sally and her team. But I really want to thank you again for all the support you've shown over the last few months. And thank you for being such good partners to us in the good times and the bad. Thank you.
This now concludes the conference. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.